for Portland, Oregon. Coming up in an hour, we've got Air Cascadia with Chris Andre for your Thursday. Then at 10:15, join us for Flashpoints, a report from the tense situation in Oaxaca, the Election Crimes Bulletin with Greg Pallast, and legal scholar Marjorie Cohn on proposed U.S. airstrikes on Syrian troops. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host Bethany Grabo talks with Laura O. Foster, author of the new book Walking with Ramona, exploring Beverly Cleary's Portland. And at 11:30 on The Film Show, Ibrahim Mubarak talks about the upcoming documentary screening of Right to Survive, Breaking the Chains. And comedy writer and author Steve Young explains exactly what an industrial musical is. That is all coming up this morning. But first, we've got Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch with the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around. That's next on KBOO.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale. Yay! This is a great time to clean out those closets and shelves and turn your old books, records, and CDs into cash for community radio. Bring them to KBOO Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. We're accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Wednesday, August 10th. The sale will be held in mid-August. Stay tuned for details. Please, no home recorded cassettes, VHS tapes, or mold. If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email Ani at volunteer@kboo.org or phone her at 503-231-8032, extension 213.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. I've got headlines, and then I want to talk with you seriously about climate change. We're getting a real break here on the weather. It's nasty in other parts of the United States. It's deadly in places. It's deadly in India, but I'll be getting to that in a few minutes. So wanted to tell you that, well, as you were listening to Joanne, you heard about the sit-down strike on the House floor, House of Representatives in Washington, on Wednesday, as dozens of Democrats staged a sit-in to push for votes on gun control bills. And the latest thing is tensions flared when Republican Representative Louie Gohmert of Texas derailed the debate, shouting, "Radical Islam!" The confrontation between the Democrats and the Republicans nearly turned physical when Gohmert began yelling, "Radical Islam killed those people! ISIS killed those people!" According to CBS News, Democratic Representative Corrine Brown of Florida started shouting back at the Republican, and lawmakers from both parties rushed to separate the two as they appeared about to come to blows. So, of course, I have to comment on this. And my big comment is the framing that the Democrats are choosing to do a sit-in for. And by the way, I agree with Joanne that, you know, it'd be nice if they had done a sit-in for the voters' rights. But no, they're going to do it over this. And the way they're framing it is if you're on the no-fly list, then you shouldn't be able to get an assault weapon. And I have a little problem with that, and that would be the no-fly list, which is unconstitutional, anti-constitutional, a police state measure put in place After the explosions downtown, as Vonnegut used to say, I think it was Vonnegut said that. No, maybe it was Carlin. our shuffling little dance that we do at every airport comes with the no-fly list, which is produced by Fatherland Security. And if you're put on it, then you can't challenge it. You can't go to court. And only in the last couple of years have people have made some inroads on that. But it still stands, still exists. And of course it was used for political hay. Of course it was used for retribution. I mean, for God's sakes, Senator Ted Kennedy was put on it. And you can't tell me that he's a terrorist or that it was a mistaken identity. No, it was just a middle finger from the right wingers in homeland insecurity. And so these Democratic lawmakers are just so incredibly clueless that they can go have a sit-down strike supporting the damn no-fly list. And then we got the Republicans acting like they care about constitutional rights. Yeah. So, and then there's this other thing that you should know about. The Brexit. The Brexit is the British exit from the European Union. Polls opened at business time, 7 a.m. local time on Thursday. Voters began to arrive. According to The Guardian, people have been voting all day, and as of 2 p.m., Pacific time, and that'll be 10 p.m. in Britain, the polls will be closing and we'll know how the vote goes. And right now, it's been very close. It's gone back and forth. It's really not clear how it's going to go. And I would say the first thing that you will notice if Britain does vote Friday morning, we'll have the results. If they vote to exit the European Union, the stock market will crash here big time. There's no question about that. It'll drop at least 7%, and maybe that'll be enough to kick it way the heck down. It just kind of depends on where those derivatives are at. Remember those derivatives? Well, they're still there, and they're still in the trillions. Some say, well, not clear just how bad that will be, and not clear how the vote will go at this point. So it's worth kind of looking at what's going on in Britain right now. From Al Jazeera, on the occupied West Bank, Palestine's Salfit, town of Salfit, sits on top of an underground wealth of water, but the city's residents are forbidden from accessing it, and they are now in crisis, as Israel's national water company, Mekorot, has reduced the water supply to the northern West Bank. Since the start of the month, residents of Salfit have been receiving between 30 and 40% of their normal water allowance. That's according to the head of the local water and wastewater department, quoting, on the first day of Ramadan, the water stopped for 24 hours with no notice. Since then, it has been coming in at less than half the capacity. We've done everything we can to try and make residents comfortable, but this is a crisis, end quote. So that's from Al Jazeera. Continuing on headlines, the number of renters dedicating at least half their income towards housing has hit a record high of 11 million people, officially. That's according to Harvard University in their annual State of the Nation Housing Report. A total of 21.3 million are spending 30% or more of their paycheck to cover the rent, also a record high. Personal finance experts generally suggest budgeting around 30% of monthly income to cover housing costs, but they write that's getting harder to do with rent prices rising higher than wages. That's a Catherine Vassell's article on money.cnn.com. The Koch brothers, according to Greenpeace, as reported in Huffington Post, have spent over $88 million in traceable funding to groups attacking climate change science, policy, and regulation. Of that total, $21 million went to groups that recently bought a full-page New York Times advertisement defending ExxonMobil from government investigations into its systematic misrepresentation of climate science. If you're an executive at a big oil company watching as ExxonMobil is finally exposed for studying climate change, covering up the science, and spreading misinformation, you're probably worried now that the state attorney generals are knocking on Exxon's door. Charles and David Koch must be worried anyway. Their foundations gave away more than $21 million to the people and groups that signed a recent full-page New York Times advertisement that defends ExxonMobil's longstanding efforts to ruin the public's understanding of climate change science. And that is also from Huffington Post. And so the Koch brothers are just doubling down on that. And why not? Why should they change something when it's working for them? They've certainly got the Republicans on their side. Time is 9 minutes after the top of the hour, 9 minutes after 9 a.m. Pacific. And I want to talk about climate change. Talk about Koch brothers. This is the time of the climate change crisis. It's upon us. And as I say here in Cascadia, it's nice and cool and drizzly outside. I quite enjoyed coming here. Well, it ain't that way in Palm Springs, and it's not that way in India. People are dying. So let's just plow into the details, shall we? And I invite your calls, 503-231-8187. Triple-digit temperatures, according to Lydia O'Connor, writing in Mother Jones, began scorching Nevada, California, Arizona, Utah, and New Mexico earlier this week. Some of the most intense heat was recorded throughout Arizona, where four hikers died in separate heat-related incidents. On Sunday, the National Weather Service announced temperature records for that calendar day in Yuma at 120 degrees. That's right here in the United States. Phoenix at 118, Tucson at 115, Flagstaff at 93. The NOAA spokeswoman Maureen O'Leary told the Huffington Post Tucson's heat tied for the third hottest day ever recorded in the city. Michael Mann, a leading climate scientist and professor of meteorology at Penn State University, was in Phoenix on Friday when the temperatures hit 106 degrees. He was speaking at a Democratic National Platform committee meeting where he pointed to the extreme weather as an example of just the sort of extreme heat that is on the increase due to human-caused climate change. The likelihood of record heat has already doubled in the United States due to human-caused warming, he said, and that's just the tip of the proverbial iceberg. Daily records were also set in California, where Burbank reached 109 degrees and Palm Springs soared to 119. I saw a picture from KBOO's Daniel, who's down in Palm Springs, and I believe the sign said 121 or 122 from the bank building thermometer. Returning to the article, the high temperatures are fueling multiple wildfires in the region. The live wildfire tracker from Climate Central showed a cluster where the fires are currently burning. The high temperatures have hampered firefighters' efforts to put out blazes that started before the heat set in. In New Mexico, the North Fire has grown to cover over 36,000 acres, while the Doghead Fire, southeast of Albuquerque, has encompassed nearly 18,000 acres. The Sherpa Fire in Santa Barbara County has spanned 8,000 acres near Santa Barbara, California. Given dry conditions, quoting a senior scientist at National Center for Atmospheric Research. Given dry conditions, the heat all goes into raising temperatures, initially drying things out even more and increasing wildfire risk. So there's more on that article at Mother Jones, or it's also actually from Huffington Post by Lydia O'Connor. And turning now to phys.org, P-H-Y-S, meaning physics, Arctic amplification is the faster warming of the Arctic compared to the rest of the Northern Hemisphere. As sea ice disappears, it's fueled by a feedback loop. Rising global temperatures are melting Arctic sea ice, leaving dark open water that absorbs more solar radiation, which in turn warms the Arctic even more. Arctic amplification is well documented, but its effects on the atmosphere are more widely debated. One hypothesis suggests that the shrinking temperature difference between the Arctic and the mid-latitudes will lead to a slowing of the jet stream, which circles the northern latitudes and normally keeps frigid polar air sharply separated from the warmer air further south. Now, apart from that article, you have seen the meteorological maps, or I guess they're pseudo-meteorological, on the television stations, and you know what the jet stream is, and it's got the little blue arrows. And it has been swerving and dipping and diving into more southern latitudes, and that generally means storms. And it has also been sucking the heat up from those latitudes into the Arctic. And the Arctic is in quite the crisis this year. There is some speculation that all of the ice will melt by September. I guess we'll have to look and see. The point that I want to make this morning is that this is no longer an academic question. We are now experiencing global warming, it is killing people. It is more subtly killing people across the globe. I'll have some more details on India in just a moment. But more subtly, I mean that it is increasing crop failures. It is increasing disease. It is causing migrations of people, migrations of animals. It's shaking the globe up. It's a crisis, and it's happening right now. Now, I've wondered what is the appropriate thing to do about climate change, and I see that people are trying all sorts of things, and I'm of the attitude that, as Mao said, let a thousand flowers bloom. All of the efforts are worthwhile, and I don't know which ones or which combinations of which ones are effective. People are trying to ride their bicycles more. People are trying. I went around my house and I put in LED light bulbs because they were available so cheaply. If you look around, I've been able to get LED light bulbs. They're obviously subsidized for as little as a dollar each. And they're just as bright as a 60-watt light bulb. And they take, I think, about 8 watts. And if you think about it, that's a tremendous saving, especially if you're like me. My eyes aren't all that good, and I tend to leave lights on in the house just, you know, in case I have to stumble around in the middle of the night. And 8 watts is a hell of a lot less than 60 or 75. And I calculated that I saved, I think it was between 700 and 800 watts just by putting in several of those bulbs. So that's one thing that, people are doing, and you can certainly save money on your electric bill that way. People are going out and blocking oil trains. People are joining 350.org and various organizations, Greenpeace, and trying to raise awareness and to just throw a roadblock into the way of increasing global warming. And what I think that it's hard to overemphasize just what a grip the petroleum masters have on us. The petroleum industry is incredibly powerful, so powerful that it still gets billions of dollars in subsidies from your tax money. It doesn't need that, of course, but it can get it, and it can get it with its iron fist. And you better believe they are well represented in the House and the Senate and in every state legislature. They can't be ignored. They are the gorilla in the room. And they are everywhere. If you look around you, you will see petroleum products, 8 to the bar. I mean, they're, petroleum is everywhere. We do everything with petroleum. This is a petroleum economy. Bicycles notwithstanding, the best we have managed so far with our electric cars and our bicycles and what have you is a little bit of fringe on the edge of a robust and expanding petroleum economy, and they control the economy of the world. You better believe it. Right now, the Saudis, probably on pressure or instructions or agreement with the U.S. hegemons, are pumping out oil like mad, which is depressing the price of oil. And it just happens that there are two economies, at least, that are very heavily dependent on lower-grade oil, and that would be Russia and especially Venezuela. The oil in Venezuela is tar-like, and it's rather expensive to process. So when prices are over $60 a barrel, you know, when prices are closer to $100 a barrel, Venezuela can get oil money, and that subsidizes the fact that their, you know, economy doesn't export a heck of a lot else from oil, and they're in tremendous crisis right now. Everyone's going hungry just about partly because the post-Chavez government has been so clumsy, and mostly because so little money is coming in. They don't have any room for mistakes, and boy, are they making mistakes. And of course, the U.S. is increasing its pressure that has always been there. And of course, the U.S., just like Cuba, has attempted assassinations and coups and what have you, and will continue to do so. And they have their special gusanos are there and act on behalf of a foreign power in their own country, which is disgusting. We live in the petroleum economy. There's no way around that. Now, so given that, and given the fact that this climate crisis, as I will give you more details in a minute, given that the climate crisis is upon us, and that it will surely accelerate into mass death, what is right, what is effective, and what is moral? Also, I want to throw that in there. What is moral to do about this situation? I'm a little surprised, given the size of the crisis, and given the fact that many people, probably millions of people, have read up on it enough to understand that that the crisis is on us, and that there will be terrible, terrible consequences falling on the fact that we continue to roar around in our cars, and I do. I roar around in my car. I need to repair my bicycle right now. Although, you know, I've traveled I've traveled so far and so long on bicycles. I practically spent the first half of my life on a bicycle. But, you know, I need to use a car because that's what's expected. That's what travel times are. That's the way the transportation networks are set up. Cars are expected. Now, what can be done about that? Nonviolently, perhaps a tax could be put on gasoline for non-farm use and on diesel. And I mean a substantial tax that would substantially reduce the use of petroleum-based transportation and encourage alternatives. But I wonder if that's even fast enough. I mean, maybe the moral thing to do, and by the way, before I even say this, this is speculation, but maybe the moral thing to do would be to take bear guns and go shoot holes in the distillation towers at the nation's distilleries to stop production of gasoline. That would be pretty violent. And of course, anyone who did that would have a good chance of dying or spending the rest of their lives in prison. But what I'm asking is, what's moral when you see the end coming? When you see that, well, let me tell you just how bad things can get. Continuing about the jet stream, I also want to tell you about what's happening in India, but right now talking about the jet stream, quoting Edward Hanna, professor in climate change at the Department of Geography in the University of Sheffield, he says, "Our results show the effect of a strongly warming Arctic and disturbed atmospheric jet stream on causing a record melt of the far northern reaches of the Greenland ice sheet last summer. The study is closely linked to ongoing work conducted at the University of Sheffield, which analyzes the connection between Arctic climate change and extreme weather events across the densely populated northern hemisphere mid-latitudes." That's us. How much and where Greenland melts can change according to how things change elsewhere on Earth. That's a quote of Professor Marco Tedesco of Columbia University. Now, skipping to a different report, the increasingly dangerous hothouse, which is from robertscribbler.com. The title is "The Increasingly Dangerous Hothouse: Local Reports Show It Felt Like 160 Degrees in India on June 13th. He writes, "The climate change-induced delay of India's monsoon is a pretty big deal. Not only does it reduce the amount of moisture necessary for the provision of life-giving crops for this country of 1.2 billion provided by the annual rains, it also increases the potential for life-threatening heat wave conditions." And he writes, "According to local reports, some of the highest heat index values ever recorded on the face of the earth were seen in India in Bhubaneswar during a period of record heat and high humidity as the Asian monsoon struggled to advance." And he's talking about earlier this month. He writes, "The Indian province of Odisha sweltered under high heat and humidity that may well have represented the most miserable conditions ever recorded on Earth at any time or place on June 12th and 13th of 2016. Cooling monsoonal rains should have arrived over that eastern section along the Bay of Bengal by that time, but this year the rains were delayed by about a week and were still about 5 days away. The heat was firmly entrenched, a great wall that seemed to fend the monsoon off." He writes, "As the frontal edge of the monsoonal flow began to run into a region of high temperatures over Odisha, humidity levels spiked even as temperatures remained high." And this is, speaking for myself, this is the crux, the confluence of humidity and temperature. He writes, "On the 12th and 13th, thermometers topped out at between 101 and 109, even as humidity levels rose. This combination generated a spike in what is called the misery index, and it also apparently pushed wet bulb temperatures in some areas to record levels for any place on Earth." And if you're wondering what wet bulb temperatures are, it's a reference to hot temperatures with high humidity. He writes, "For an unconfirmed report out of the Bhubaneswar indicates that temperatures on June 13th hit 103.5 as relative humidity readings were at 87%. That's a reading of 37.6 centigrees on a wet bulb index. And if this report," he writes, "is true, it means that it felt like 160 degrees Fahrenheit. 71 degrees Celsius for a brief period that day. If so, this would be near the highest misery index ever recorded on the planet, just a hair below last year's peak measure in Iraq of 163 Fahrenheit index wet bulb reading, and outright crushing periods during 2015 when India's wet bulb measures in Andhra Pradesh hit 30 degrees centigrade. So he writes, a wet bulb measure is a kind of thermometer for latent heat in the atmosphere. It uses a wet bladder to measure the temperature of a membrane at the point at which water evaporates. It's meant to simulate the lowest temperature the human skin can reach through evaporative cooling as the body sweats. The higher the combined heat and humidity, the higher the wet bulb temperature and the hotter it feels. We've all experienced this when stepping outside on a day in which the temperature and humidity are high. And we intuitively know that it's a combination of heat and atmospheric moisture that makes hot days feel even more oppressive. It's a combo that's also dangerous to human health. At a certain point, the human body becomes unable to cool itself by sweating. And this level of latent heat at which the human body becomes incapable of transporting heat away from the skin is a wet bulb reading of 35 degrees Celsius. And he writes, wet bulb readings do not need to hit 35 C to risk loss of life and heat injury. Wet bulbs above 25 are considered dangerous. And readings for extended periods near 30 degrees centigrade have resulted in mass injury and loss of life in places like Europe during the early 2000s, in Chicago during 1995, and India during 2015 and 2016. And speaking for myself, you're not used to hearing centigrade readings. There is a rhyme that you can use to remember it. When you hear readings in centigrade Celsius, and it is, let's see, how does it go? It's 10 is cold, 20 is nice, 30 is hot, 0 is ice. So 35 degrees Celsius is getting between 95 and 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And when we're talking about 40 degrees or 71 degrees centigrade, we're talking about way too hot for you to survive. And that's the point that I'm making here, that conditions are already popping up around the globe. And this is June, may I emphasize, this ain't August. Non-survivable temperatures are beginning to pop up. This is the crisis. This is it. It's kind of hard to argue with heat of that level. You can look at a storm, and previously people have been able to say, well, there's always been storms, or look at this storm over here and it was larger, you know, 50 years ago or something. Well, it's kind of hard to argue with the heat. And so something needs to be done. And I'd like to know what you think that should be. What should be done? 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And Mary Jane is on the air.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Happy belated birthday and happy retirement.
Well, thank you.
Yes. I love your knowledge and your truth that you give us every week. And I would like to say Black Lives Matter, because every frickin' day when I wake up and listen to the radio, I have no technology, so I'm kind of blessed that way, I think. The cops are never held accountable for any of their injustice, their murders, and every day, as we know. But my question is to you, since I'm not a technology person, I know I was out on one of those hot days. I volunteered for the Audubon Society, so I was out in the pastures, and I saw somebody that had an app for the UV indicator, and he said it was 10 that day. Are those accurate, do you know?
Ultraviolet readers?
Yes.
I'm not familiar with them. Sorry to say.
And they only go up to 12, so that didn't sound very good.
There have been some articles in the press about damage to the ozone layer. The thing that I read most recently was saying that ethane being released by fracking has been attacking the ozone layer. So I need to look further into that, and I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's so much that contributes to it. And as India and the heat there, I know Vandana Shiva has been talking about the GMO, and Monsanto has been alive and well there for many years, and the water wars are just going to get more intense in all the countries, including the US of A. And back to the Christmas tree, I think they call them the Christmas tree, the Muslim entrapment. a few years back in Portland.
Oh, yes.
I know after that in Corvallis, the mosque was set ablaze. I don't know if anybody was ever held accountable, but there is so many young people coming together and starting different movements. And I've been around. I was on the East Coast in the 80s and went to a lot of gay pride and all the injustices, fighting all the injustices, sweeping the people out of the parks then. And in the precincts there, I mean, this was in the 80s. It was like a joke, those guys in some of the precincts, stealing the drugs and going on these. It sounded like the Three Stooges. I meant some of the articles. But anyway, enough of that. But have a great day, Teresa. Peace and love. And rock and reggae. I love Thursday at KBOO. And all anybody right. that wants to do something that think they can't support KBOO.
Well, that's a good point. Thank you very much. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I've been talking about this this measure of heat and humidity called the wet bulb reading. Actually uses a physical wet bulb and determines how much heat can be lost from the human body. In other words, how much heat can you shed in hot conditions and how miserable is it? And reading from Robert Scribler's article on robertscribler.org. I got more Texan than I meant to for a moment there. .org. For last year was the last time, he writes, a wet bulb reading over 35 centigrade was ever recorded on the face of the earth. And the 2016 wet bulb reading, 37.6 centigrade for Bhubaneswar, if it bears out, is an extraordinary measure. Readings this high over large regions over any extended period would make staying outdoors without access to cool water or climate-controlled environments unlivable for human beings. And that's the point I want to emphasize right now. Things have already gotten out of control. And returning to that article, a human-forced warming of the world by fossil fuel burning appears to be now in the process of bringing those conditions about. A condition of dangerous added latent heat to the atmosphere that has caused some scientists to sound the alarm that a global hothouse emergency is already upon us. And unless a massive curtailment of fossil fuel burning takes place soon, large sections of the Earth's surface will be rendered uninhabitable to human beings due to atmospheric latent heat content alone. He writes, as ocean surface temperatures rise, more moisture is pumped into the atmosphere in the form of humidity. This extra humidity hits regions of air that have already been warmed to much higher readings by the overburden of heat-trapping gases like CO2 in the atmosphere. The result is a higher latent heat content of the airs of the earth, and breaching of wet bulb readings that are deadly to human beings who lack access to climate-controlled environments. So that's something to remember. One is the phrase wet bulb reading and what it represents, the use of an instrument to measure just how miserable it is and whether you're able to shed that heat. And the second part, that phrase, lack access to climate-controlled environments. It's a little warm where I'm standing here, but this place is climate controlled, and maybe you're in a climate controlled environment, and maybe you're not. So you're in the Northwest, which arguably much of the time is climate controlled by the Pacific Ocean, but the fact is that fails at times, doesn't it? And have you noticed over the years that when the temperature climbs over 104 Fahrenheit, the transmission lines tend to sag? And the transmission lines tend to sag during an overload, and did you notice the power tends to go out? And that sort of thing is only going to get worse. That means that you could be absent a climate control environment, and that you could be suffering these wet bulb readings that are beyond the capacity of the human body to endure. So what are you going to do about that? I mean, in the short term, maybe you want to get a petroleum-fueled polluting generator just to make sure, if you see that heat wave coming, that your air conditioner is able to work. Or maybe you don't even have an air conditioner, and maybe you're outside and listening to me right now, and that means that you would have to go and find a cool place. I am a native of Texas, and when the temperature was over 100 degrees there, as it often was in the summer, the late 80s, I used to go down to a place called Zilker Park, which has a spring which would come out of the ground at, I think it was 69 degrees year-round. So you could swim in that thing, whether it was snowing or whether it was over 100 degrees. And I would go set up a bench so that I could put my legs into the water. And that was enough because, you know, you do have a circulatory system. So if you can get a substantial part of your body cool, the rest of your body will begin to cool down with that as well. And when I was a bus driver years ago, and I was in an unair-conditioned bus, I remember there was one that I used to call the clown bus because it bounced so much and it would get so hot that just about all the models had somewhat melted dashboards. I would put a bag of ice on my legs and just drive around like that with a big bag of ice on my legs, and that allowed me to get through it because I am rather subject to heat, and this is personally rather alarming to me. I would like to know how it affects you. What are you thinking when you hear this? Do you intend to deal with it personally? I would say that you'd better think, because hot temperatures don't come here a lot, but they do come, and we don't know what it's going to be like next week, and we don't know what it's going to be like in August. And you'd best get access to a climate-controlled environment, because this could be the summer that things get very hot for a couple of weeks or even longer here in the Northwest. We don't know. Hope not. Doesn't happen as much, but there's no guarantee, is there? Number to call, 503-231-8187. And furthermore, politically and socially, what you gonna do? Who you gonna support? What actions do you think you might take? What actions do you think are good to take about this climate emergency? And I don't think I can exaggerate right now. And Mike is on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
So I am one of those people that happens to believe that there is value in nonviolent direct action.
All right.
And so I was one of the 100 people that were blockading the train in Vancouver last week.
That was an awesome action. I saw the reports on that.
I'm sorry?
That was an awesome action. I saw the reports on that.
That really was an awesome action. I'm very proud of the people that were involved in that. And it was very amazing because there was over 100 of us, and we came together quickly within a couple of weeks after the derailment in Mosier, and actually self-organized ourselves into doing this action. And there were 21 people arrested, as most of your listeners probably know. I was not one of them. I was working media along with some of my other friends, new friends there. And, you know, this action was supported by Portland Rising Tide and 350pdx.org. And so, you know, it was a real feel-good thing, and it was very dramatic. And if you look at the pictures, you know, UP, Union Pacific, brought the train right up to the protesters, and it was honking, you know, the big whistle, and people were singing. And it was really very beautiful action. But now we're reading that Union Pacific is now planning to indeed start. And, you know, a lot of this was, it was in Vancouver, but the connection was Mosier. It was solidarity with the people of Mosier who have completely lost their aquifer now as a result of the explosion and trying to contain the fire there. Their aquifer was ruined. Their sewer system was ruined.
It's a miracle no one was killed.
And we are lucky no one was killed. The conditions just have to be such that things weren't worse than they were. Nonetheless, there were, I'm reading, 42,000 gallons of crude spilled. You know, a lot of that went into the ground, and some of that went into the river. But my point is that, you know, now, a week later, Union Pacific, and, you know, the governor has called for a moratorium. The governor and both Oregon senators and a number of congresspeople and mayors across the state have called for a moratorium on sending oil trains through the Columbia Gorge and indeed through all of Oregon until they can figure out what the hell happened there. They're still not even sure. You know, Union Pacific is saying, oh, there was this bolt, you know, but there are other railway experts that saying one of these ties, one of these bolts is not enough to derail this thing. So they don't even know what happened yet. Yet now yesterday we find out that Union Pacific is going to start, despite all these pleas from the people and arrests and local representatives, are going to start sending oil trains through the gorge again and throughout Oregon. They've announced this yesterday. So what I would just ask people to do is to be aware of this. Check our web pages, portlandrisingtide.org, 350pdx.org. The PDX part is important because it's very different than 350.org. And also the Fossil Fuel Resistance Network Facebook page. So if you just go to Facebook and look up Fossil Fuel Resistance Network, we're not sure yet quite how we're going to respond to this, but I can assure you that we will.
Well, thank you very much for that call. And that must have been a very dramatic action. I can imagine how intimidating it must have been to have the train pull up there. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And the question I've been putting to you, listening to KBOO, is what can be done, what should be done? And do you realize just how imminent the problem is now? What an emergency we are now facing with global warming. And the fact is that killer heat waves can appear anywhere over the next few months, and surely will. Once again, that number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And was talking earlier about some details about global warming. And was talking about the jet stream swinging around. It's that sort of thing that adds a certain uncertainty, adds uncertainty to the forecasts. Perhaps you've noticed, as I have, that weather forecasts don't seem to be quite as certain as they were more than a decade ago. That it seems to me that the most that one can actually forecast forward these days is 2-3 days, and it seems to me that it used to be a week. I could be wrong about that. I can't point to any scientific evidence. Right now, the Britain exit, the Brexit vote, is taking place. Guardian writes, amidst ominous thunderclaps and lightning raining heavily in London and the southeast. So they're getting a little reminder as they go to the polls there. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Ken is on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
I hear a lot of talk on the program this morning about how hot it's getting, and what we're talking about basically is climate change. And climate's a dynamic system, which, you can't graph it linearly. You have to use chaos theory, right? So what happens is more energy you put into the system, it's like a pendulum swinging back and forth. It swings higher and higher, but it goes from hot to cold and back, and each time it gets worse and worse. But what happens in chaos theory is it reaches a bifurcation point where it goes off in one direction only, either hot or cold. And, I've heard some talk, I read this book called Not by Fire, but by Ice, kind of describes a process whereby, it's kind of like the movie, what was it, The Day After Tomorrow?
Yes, it was idiotic but fun.
Yeah, but where you can get supercells that go all the way up above the stratosphere and pull the super cold air down and go into a kind of a rapid ice age. And I just wonder if that's something, you want to throw into the mix.
All right. Is that it? Are you off the air? I guess that's it.
Yep.
Oh, you're still there. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, here's an article from The Guardian again. In 2013, a team of citizen science volunteers who collaborate on the climate myth debunking website skepticalscience.com published a paper finding a 97% expert consensus on human-caused global warming in peer-reviewed research. Over the past 3 years, that paper has been downloaded 500,000 times for perspective. That's 4 times more than the second most downloaded paper in the Institute of Physics journals. The statistic reveals a remarkable level of interest for a peer-reviewed scientific paper. So over a three-year period, the study has been downloaded an average of 440 times per day, and the pace has hardly slowed. So what they're saying is that people are really paying attention to this now. And I would argue that's because things have gotten fairly extreme. You still there?
No, he's not.
Okay, the number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187, and Bill is on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm listening to this, and I think that when you talk about being misinformed, there's like this counter to global warming, and there are the advocates for saying that it's true. And trying to dig through it all as to whether it's real or it's not, I think we should use history as an indicator for understanding that the corporate agenda has always been to misinform and prolong the obvious for the sake of profit. So whether we go back and we look at, you know, the point in time where there were rivers that were actually catching on fire in America, or discovering that the pollutions of the industries along the rivers actually created this mess where today, even 100 years later, we're still trying to clean it up. And I think what we really need to look at it as, are we subsidizing the profits of corporations who choose to pollute only to have to pick up the tab in the future? So whether it's, I think we could say that there's a great deal of truth to this idea of global warming, but what we're combating is a group of people who have always attempted to misinform those who want to be informed for the sake of prolonging the pollution. And it's not about just being an environmentalist, or it's not being anti-business. It's simply saying, can we really afford the expense of what's to come if we do nothing or we continue to be misinformed?
I see what you're saying there. Well, we are confronting quite a hierarchy. It happens to be a capitalist hierarchy. There have been other hierarchies in history, and they do have a great deal of power. For example, the Koch, shall we say, coalition, they don't call themselves that, but the Koch, some of the Koch brothers funded groups got together, and they do this AstroTurf thing where it looks like a whole bunch of scientific foundations are getting together to support an idea. It's all Koch brothers. They bought a $400,000 full-page ad in New York Times the other day to poo-poo climate change because, you know, it's been working for them, and they've been able to get some breaking traction against people wanting to do something about this global climate disaster. Hey, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. This is one of those situations where, you know, the opposition's pretty well defined. I don't want to fall into the demagogue trap of saying these people are evil. I'm not sure that I believe in evil. I think that people do what they think is necessary, right, or what they feel they're trapped into doing. There's all sorts of mental circuits that go into doing what you do and why you do it. For example, I think I would find it rather difficult to explain as a ghost to my progeny 100 years from now why the hell I'm getting around in a polluting petroleum-fueled car. What's my excuse? Well, I've got excuses. It's what I need to do, I think. My answer to that is, I do need to bicycle more. I have bicycled in the past. I'm getting healthy again. I can bicycle more. And also that we need collective action. That's what really has the power. Because if you graph out the number of people riding bicycles now compared to 10 years ago, with that rate of growth, sometime after the entire ecosphere goes down in flames, we should achieve a majority of, bicycle riders in a couple hundred years. I believe in riding the bike, yeah. But incremental change, no. It ain't time for incremental change, in my opinion. It's time for drastic, immediate confrontation over an extreme climate change emergency. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I just want to thank the engineer who is so patient with me. And Harry is on the air.
Greetings, Teresa, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Last year, PBS had a special on nature, and they were talking about the changes in the Arctic and what the animals were going through. Killer whales don't like pack ice or ain't that nice, but since the ice is melting in the Arctic, they're able to go into the Arctic Ocean. And the animals there, the seals aren't used to, were safe from killer whales, so they weren't used to avoiding them. And same thing with some of the whales, when other whales went up there to calve and give birth. And these killer whales are now preying on all these animals. Yesterday, PBS had a special on the polar bears and the distress they're having up in the Arctic region because everything is warming up there. And also, OPB had another special yesterday on the radio. They were talking about all the pine forest in northern of Nevada has died because of drought and the pine beetle. And they're talking about major forest fires this year there.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, and so also another climate catastrophe no one's really talking about is the Caspian Sea. The Russians diverted some rivers that used to go into this Dead Sea. Well, now this Dead Sea is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and there's no humidity they can get from this ocean anymore, this Caspian Sea, so it's getting smaller and smaller. So I think it's going to cause some issue, too.
An echo of the former USSR's Aral Sea, but go ahead.
Yeah. But you also mentioned that what can we do about this heat that's coming? Well, we can dig underground. We could become mole people. It'll be cooler underground than above the surface.
Makes me think of the 70s movie chasing each other around with lasers to keep the population down.
I'm thinking about the Planet of the Apes 2.
Yeah, like that. That kind of movie.
Congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.
And I'd like to warn you about something. When you get Social Security, I don't know if you get Social Security too.
And not for another 7 years.
Okay, well, be advised, what they do is they take your pension, and then they take your Social Security, and they put it together, and they tax both of them.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so that's what you got. That's what I'm going through, so that's what you'll go through, too.
Well, thanks for that. Speaking of methods of resistance, I have looked at being a tax resister, and I do believe at some point I'll calculate. It'll be something like, I might have 10 years left on the, I'm not talking about right now. At some point I'll say, maybe I've got a decade left. You don't live forever, thank God. And I'll think, it might take 10 years to actually bust me. So I'm going to stop paying those taxes because, it's immoral to contribute to a capitalist juggernaut and imperialist murdering monster. But hey, thanks for your call. Number to call is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. On Sunday, May 8th, Germany hit a new high in renewable energy generation thanks to a sunny and windy day. At one point around 1 p.m., the country's solar, wind, hydro, and biomass plants were supplying about 55 gigawatts of the 63 gigawatts being consumed. 87% power prices actually went negative for a few hours, meaning commercial customers were being paid to consume electricity. So do you think renewables might work? Well, it's working real well in Deutschland. What do you think about that? Forrest is on the air.
Hi. Hello?
Hello, Forrest. What's up?
I just want to mention, when you go into a sauna, a sauna bath, which is high temperature and high humidity, there's always a warning sign to limit the time that you're in there.
Yeah, 2 weeks is right out.
And the door was locked and you couldn't get out. What would happen to you? That's what we're talking about.
That's what we're talking about. And I want to put out that warning. I mean, you need to pay attention to the weather forecast. And it is being said that, don't absolutely know these things. The best guess that I've been reading and the most, scientific information, as far as my non-scientific mind can figure it out, is that there was a tremendous pulse of global heat that has been sitting in the Pacific for a long, long time and has come to the surface now. And there's some speculation that that is somewhat an oscillation, interdecadal oscillation, and that that means maybe after next year, or I'm not sure exactly how long, temperatures go down for a bit. So it's another wave. It's another oscillation. It has to do with, you know, planetary scale thermodynamics. And but we don't know everything. We've only just begun measuring deep Pacific temperatures. So the fact is, we are now facing a situation right now this year, coming up the next few months, in which you may look at the weather forecast and see that there is going to be a week or maybe 2 weeks of 100, 105, 110, 115 degrees. I'll tell you, if I'm in a situation where it's day after day that hot, and as it has been in, say, Palm Springs, and it's only getting down to, say, 88 degrees like it was in Palm Springs, I will die. And I'm not exaggerating. A lot of you will die. I'm old. I'm pushing 60. I'm fat. I'm out of shape. And that kind of heat will kill me, and it'll kill a lot of people. And I don't want to get to the point where we go year after year, and we will see a situation again. We have certainly seen massive heat waves, but we will see worse heat waves. We will see a situation where 1,000 people would die in an American city, and that's an emergency now, isn't it? Are you still there?
Yeah. One other thing. I just wondered what your opinion is about Brexit. Do you think it's better to, you know, exit or better to remain?
Well, I will not claim to be very well informed on it. I was looking at it, and it seems to me that economically, under the system as it is, there's probably more economic flow, and it's probably better for people generally if they stay in. The older people are polled as saying that they want to be out, and there's some speculation in this because older people are saying, well, I've got my pension coming in, I don't have to worry about new economic opportunities and don't care about them. Older people are also saying that they are voting to keep European Union out because they want to keep Syrian immigrants out, and they want to keep immigrants from North Africa out. And if you think that's hedging around white supremacy, well, it is. And so there's that on that side. And on the other side, there's a certain degree of knee-jerk conformity and desire to just go along to get along. So, you know, from here, I'm not going to claim that I have a line on what's best. I suspect they'd be better off staying in the European Union. And of course, I'm offended by reactionary stances generally.
Yeah. It seems to me that if the European Union were a democratic institution, it would be a good thing, but it's not.
Well, it's about as democratic as the United States, which is to say, you know, what the hegemons choose for us, we get to choose between, and that ain't much. Right. In the way of democracy, they do have councils and elected representatives, but it's very heavily weighted on behalf of the financiers, and the Germans hold most of the weight, and that's probably a point of resentment as well. Although again, I'm just speculating that.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. I think I have time for one more call. I've been talking about climate change, what to do about it, and Randy is on the air.
Yeah, in 1992, I wrote an article in the Oregon Peace Worker on a tax shift for environmental reasons, which is the first such article I'm aware of. What that really means is that to comply with Kyoto would take shifting approximately 25% of federal revenue in the United States, from some other taxes to environmentally oriented taxes. One major issue around this is that environmental taxes tend to be regressive, so if you want to maintain the current distributional balance, you have to pair them with something else that focuses more on the rich, like a net tax on assets is probably the strongest example of that you can have. You can't really do that with an income tax. It's just the math just will not work out.
Well, and when you try to do that sort of thing, when you try to increase taxes on people who can best afford it, they use their control of the corporate media, of the monopoly media,
actually,
and they say, oh, this is an attack on all of us, and they mischaracterize
it. Well, let me put it this way. Actually, it's not an increase in tax. It's maintaining the current distributional balance so that when you do the shift, you don't give the rich a huge windfall. Now, of course, there's an element of them that want the windfall, and they'll lobby for it, right?
But, oh, yeah.
The thing is that if you get it in the right formula, they're not getting whammy, they're not getting They're not getting a windfall, and that's and I think that
I've run out of time to discuss that, and I thank you for your call.
Thank you
and,
very much.
You're welcome. We're getting towards the top of the hour here. You're listening to KBOO, Press Watch on KBOO, going out to you via the transmitter on the hill. 25,000 watts, we're glad to say. So that means that you're picking us up in Vancouver, close to the coast, and maybe you're listening to us on KBOO.fm, and you could click the contribution button and just tag us with enough to keep going, because that's how we keep going, and that's why we are who we are. And it is in that manner that we go out to all the ships at sea.
And however you're listening to The Boo, thank you. We are KBOO Portland. Coming up in 15 minutes, join us for Flashpoints. Today, a report from the tense situation in Oaxaca, the Election Crimes Bulletin with Greg Pallas, and legal scholar Marjorie Cohn on proposed U.S. airstrikes on Syrian troops. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Bethany Grabo talks with Laura O. Foster, author of the new book Walking with Ramona, exploring Beverly Cleary's Portland. And at 11:30 on The Film Show, Ibrahim Mubarak talks about the upcoming documentary screening of Right to Survive, Breaking the Chains. And comedy writer and author Steve Young explains exactly what an industrial musical is. That's all coming up right after Air Cascadia, which is up next with Chris Andre. Stick around. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, the hallmark event for the Oregon Food Bank. Once again, with our partners at Oregon Community Media, KBOO will be broadcasting the four-day festival in the Portland metro area, across the state from Astoria to Ashland, and from Andrews to Antelope, and around the world at kboo.fm. Remember to support your local food bank as you tune in to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, to enjoy the 29th annual Waterfront Blues Festival.